That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The ShotSpotter technology was rolled out under my administration. So I know firsthand the impact that it had in terms of, you know, helping us to decrease gun violence in the city. It was a little surprising to me that you wanted to keep it through the summertime in a Democratic National Convention. But my question would be then, if it's good enough to keep it through then, why wouldn't you just extend the contract, period?
Hi, everybody. I'm Fran Spielman. My guest this week is former Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson. Eddie, thanks for joining us. How's life after CPD treating you?
Well, thanks for having me. It's been good. I'm starting to get a little antsy now, so I might get out here and do a little something, but living my best life right now, so no complaints.
What are you up to nowadays, sir?
Well, you know, I may do some consulting very soon, but, you know, when I was superintendent, you know, I had just bought a new house. And so over these last couple of years, I've been able to get some projects done around here that I really didn't have time to do before. So that's been keeping me busy, but I'm running out of things to do now. So now I've been traveling a little bit, but now I'm ready to kind of do something just to keep me busy a little bit.
Don't tell me you're remodeling bathrooms and kitchens in your house, are you?
Well, so something like that, you know.
With your own hands?
Yeah, I'm actually pretty handy, believe it or not. So, yeah.
What's the biggest project you've taken on in that house?
Well, in the basement. The basement was already finished, but probably the biggest project was just kind of redoing it down there, getting it like I really wanted it. So that's pretty much finished now. So now I can move on to something else.
Sounds like a man cave.
yeah, definitely.
This has been a pivotal week for law enforcement in Chicago. Mayor Brandon Johnson announced that he is canceling the ShotSpotter contract, that is the gunshot detection technology integrated into the strategic decision support centers at 12 of Chicago's 22 police districts. But the mayor also announced that he was trying to keep this technology around until September 22nd. If that happens, it would keep it around through the traditional summer surge of violent crime and through the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. What was your reaction to that decision? Did it surprise you in any way in the way it was done?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I was surprised about it because, you know, of course, the ShotSpotter technology was rolled out under my administration. So I know firsthand the impact that it had in terms of, you know, helping us to decrease gun violence in the city. And so, yeah, I was really surprised that first of all, that they're not going to renew the contract. And then secondly, it was a little surprising to me that they wanted to keep it through the summertime and through the DNC, because what that says to me is that you do believe that it has value, you know, so you want to keep it through the summertime in a Democratic National Convention. But my question would be then, if it's good enough to keep it through then, why wouldn't you just extend the contract, period? Because here's the bottom line, friend. And I don't know, you know, who's advising the mayor or, you know, the dynamics, the internal dynamics he has to deal with. I'm sure he's trying to do the best job he can and make the best decisions he can. And, you know, so when you're in a position like that, of course, you have people advising you. But here's the thing. In my opinion, if you can recall when I was superintendent, I always said that you shouldn't put a price on public safety. And I know that ShotSpotter helps. It's one tool in the toolbox to help us keep violent crime down in the city. And so if you know that, then those people that are really affected by gun violence in their neighborhoods on the south and west sides predominantly, if ShotSpotter can provide them some safety and help them to feel a bit safer, then we should do it. We should do it. They have the right to feel as safe on the south and west sides as they do on the north side. They have a right to feel like that. So if we can provide that for them, then that's what we should do. And you know, don't get me wrong. I understand, you know, that it's pricey. I get it. But I also know that it helps decrease the gun violence in neighborhoods. When we rolled it out, I believe it was 2017, in Inglewood, the 7th and 11th police districts, one on the west side and one on the south side, which both were historically the most violent districts in the city at given times, which is why we chose those two particular districts, because I knew if we could get it down in those areas, then that would be a win for the city. And I can remember, I don't have the stats in front of me right now, of course, but I do recall in the 7th District, Inglewood, within like 3 months, that gun violence went down by about 45-46%. And that's stunning to see a decrease like that. So, you know, when you look at it in those terms, I'm disappointed that they're not going to renew that contract.
Now, Mayor Johnson campaigned on a promise to get rid of this. The political activists who helped him rise from the single digits to the mayor's office demanded this. They argue that the gunshot detection technology that has been embedded in this crime-fighting strategy of Chicago's for more than a decade is too costly, that it's ineffective, that it contributes to over-policing in Black and brown communities where the majority of gun violence occurs, and that getting rid of it is an important step in rebuilding the shattered trust between citizens and police. And it's also, they say, a prelude to dismantling the police department's growing arsenal of surveillance tools that they hate so much, which includes the largest network of surveillance cameras outside London, as well as license plate readers, helicopters, facial recognition technology. What say you to all of those arguments?
This is what I would say, Fran. In my career, especially while I was superintendent, I never went into a Black and brown community where they said they didn't want the police. Not one time did anybody say that to me. Now, what they would say is that they wanted the police to treat them fairly and respectfully, and I think that's a, you know, that's a legitimate ask. I don't understand, you know, first of all, the ShotSpotter is not a surveillance tool. It's an acoustics tool. So all it does is pick up sound. That's what it does. Gunshots. So I don't know why they think it's a surveillance tool, because it's just simply not that. It only picks up gunshot detection, you know, acoustics. I understand it's pricey. I understand that. But when we rolled it out, I remember going to a community meeting in Inglewood in the 7th District to explain, because a lot of folks over there were against it at the time, but we brought them in, let them see what it was all about, and they got on board. So I just have an issue with a few people, you know, rallying against it when the majority of people in those neighborhoods, they saw the difference that it made. And the majority of them want that gunshot detection in their neighborhoods, you know. So I don't agree with what, you know, everybody has their own opinions, you know, and they're entitled to them. I just don't agree with those activists and the reasoning behind why they don't want it. Again, if it's something that can make us safer, then we should use it. And again, I don't think we should put a price on public safety. Whatever it takes, whatever it costs in our city to make people safer, we should be willing to do it. And the thing of it is, the money that came, that the money they paid for ShotSpotter, you can only utilize that money for law enforcement purposes or OEMC, Office of Emergency Management in the city. So those two entities are the only ones that can pull from that particular bucket of money. So I remember one day listening to one of the activists say, let's put that money into, put it into programs and this and that. Well, the fact of it is, you can't do that. You know, it's a, I believe it's a state statute that indicates where that bucket of money can go. You know, so to say we should do this with that money or do that is just wrong. And I know that I agree we need programs, different programs around the city for, you know, the more impoverished people. And I totally agree with that. But I don't know why we can't do both, because me being in law enforcement, you know, I took an oath to serve and protect. And I think that ShotSpotter was one of the tools. Matter of fact, I don't think it, I know it, that helped us keep our communities safer. So that's what I would say to that pushback.
The campaign to get rid of ShotSpotter gained political steam after the police shooting of 13-year-old Adam Toledo in March 2021. Officer Eric Stillman was responding to a ShotSpotter alert when he chased Toledo into an alley in Little Village. He shot the boy in his chest just a split second after the body cam video showed the teenager dropping the handgun and raising both of his hands in the air. In the furor that followed, we had all these reports to publicly question the efficacy and the crime-fighting value of ShotSpotter. The MacArthur Justice Center at Northwestern, their School of Law, found that nearly 86% of police deployments to alerts of gunfire prompted no formal reports of any crime. The city's inspector general concluded that the technology seldom leads to investigatory stops or evidence of gun crimes, and can also alter the way officers interact with neighborhoods. And just last week, outgoing state's attorney Kim Fox piled on with a report of her own that found that ShotSpotter technology had a minimal impact on prosecuting gun violence cases. And yet, the proponents, like Police Committee Chairman Chris Taliaferro, a former sergeant himself, argues that those statistics are skewed by the fact that people who are used to hearing gunshots in their neighborhoods don't always call 911 every time they hear that sound, nor do the shooters stick around long enough to get caught. So what do you say to all these studies? And is the mayor playing to a fringe group here by going along with getting rid of ShotSpotter?
So here's the thing, Fran. You know, I've heard about those studies also. And first of all, we have to know what data we need to collect. Now, I will say this, as superintendent, if we didn't have the vision at that time to incorporate certain methods of capturing a certain data, you know, we don't know how many people that police rendered aid to, you know, because a ShotSpotter alert pointed them in a certain direction. We don't know those things. You know, you look at Officer Ariana Preston, who was murdered. Had we not had that ShotSpotter alert, who knows when we would have found her over there, you know, because there was no 911 call. The ShotSpotter alert is what directed police over to there, you know. Now, it would have been wonderful if we had gotten there in enough time to save her life, but unfortunately we didn't. But the point is, that's a perfect example of no one calling 911 and the ShotSpotter alert directing the police over there. And I know for a fact, you know, in those neighborhoods that ShotSpotter took the place of 911 calls when we, you know, because people in those neighborhoods tend to stop calling just because they hear gunfire. Now, as far as the Adam Toledo incident goes, that was horrible and it was tragic. There's no question about that. It was. But I think that blaming ShotSpotter for that is wrong. You know, what we should be digging into in that situation was, why was a 13-year-old kid out at 2 o'clock in the morning with a handgun in the first place. That's what we should be focusing on, not blaming the technology for what happened. You know, we have deeper problems, obviously, than worrying about the technology directing the police over there. But I think one of the main problems is that the data collection of what's actually going on with ShotSpotter is skewed. And, you know, so I think that we need to refocus on how to capture the data that we're actually looking for. Like I mentioned, how many times do the police render aid to people because of a ShotSpotter call? And we know that's happened. I think I heard someone quote over 400 times since the technology has been implemented. We just didn't know back then that we should capture it. So I think moving forward, if it is, if it comes back in some form or fashion, you know, CPD needs to every time any police action occurs because of ShotSpotter, then it needs to be captured in a report somehow. So I know that you can do anything you want to with data and numbers, but I just think that we captured the wrong type of data, and we don't have everything we need to properly educate ourselves on whether or not it's effective, because the efficacy of ShotSpotter needs to be captured, but it needs to be captured in the proper way. And I just don't think we do that yet.
The mayor in the how he did this, wanting to keep it around until September 22nd, but waiting until just days before the contract was about to expire before rather timidly announcing this decision. And then, because the contract has already been extended twice and an extension was not available, that means he has to negotiate new terms. Now we're hearing from aldermen who've talked to company representatives. They're saying that ShotSpotter has rejected the extension under the terms that the mayor offered, and that that could mean that the system that Chicago has come to rely on could be turned off tomorrow night at midnight, and the city will have to go cold turkey. That's a lot to swallow. Have you heard that? Have you confirmed that? And if so, what's going to happen?
No, I've heard that. I haven't confirmed it as of now. I think it's sad, you know, because if the city did want to, which I've heard that they wanted to extend it through, then that means that they think it's of some value. Otherwise, why would you want to do that? Now, ShotSpotter's end, I can understand them saying no, because those few months isn't going to really matter to them. So why would they do that? You know, so I get that piece of it too. You know, so I think if they turn it off tomorrow night, it's going to set the city back. It's tragic, because I know firsthand what ShotSpotter did. You know, like I said, and the saddest part to me is that in some of these challenged areas, you know, where people have gotten accustomed to gunfire that don't call the police, I think there are going to be victims out there that perhaps we could save, make their lives a little bit better after an incident like that. And if it's turned off, then unfortunately, those things won't happen. We're going to go back to pre-ShotSpotter days, where we're going to have to rely on either police patrolling and observing something, or folks in those neighborhoods. Perhaps they'll go back to calling the police. But if it's turned off tomorrow night, it's just a bad, to me, in my opinion, it's a sad day for the citizens of this city.
Now, Police Superintendent Larry Snelling was the biggest cheerleader in favor of ShotSpotter. Does this decision by Mayor Brandon Johnson, who picked him, undercut his superintendent?
Well, it's not going to help.
What message does it send to that rank and file that Snelling is leading?
Well, you know, I have heard Superintendent Snelling on several occasions voice his support for ShotSpotter. So I'm sure he's discouraged and frustrated a bit, you know, by it. And hopefully they've had some conversation about it, but it's definitely not going to help in terms of the crime fight. And at the end of the day, you know, in the city that does suffer from gun violence, it's all hands on deck, which means we need everybody, not just the police, but the business community, the citizens in these neighborhoods, the clergy, We need everybody on board to help decrease this gun violence. So, you know, the rank and file, I don't know if it'll have as big an impact on them, because they are good officers out there trying to do what they can. But I think it has a bigger impact on the superintendent and his command staff who actually work with that stuff and know how it actually operates. Now, don't get me wrong, the officers in the SDSC rooms that actually have seen the benefit of it, you know, I'm sure it's going to be a disappointment for them, because I do believe most officers come on to do the right thing, you know, so I think it's going to be a disappointment to them.
Have you talked to Snelling about the mayor's decision?
No, I have not. I believe he's out of the country right now. So perhaps we'll have some conversation when he gets back, but I haven't spoken to him.
Yet another police controversy this week is Mayor Johnson's request for a second city council vote rejecting an arbitrator's ruling that would allow police officers accused of the most serious wrongdoing recommended for firing or suspensions longer than a year to go around the police board and take their cases to arbitration. The mayor has asked the council to approve the rest of the contract, which he sweetened the pay raises that Lori Lightfoot had agreed to, and they have done that. But now, for the second time, he's asking them to reject and separate out the arbitration option. What do you think of that? What message does that send to the rank and file?
Well, that's a disappointment to the rank and file. And you know, I've talked to several officers about that since this whole controversy popped up. And a lot of them have the feeling that, you know, City Hall doesn't care what happens to them, or that they don't really have their back. And, you know, and I tell them, you know, listen, let's give the mayor a chance before we make that decision. However, it is frustrating for them. You know, if the arbitrator ruled that they can have that option, then I think that we should give it to them. You know, they should have the same rights as everybody else in the city. They shouldn't be treated as second-class citizens. Now, don't get me wrong, I understand law enforcement is the only entity that have the ability to take someone's life. And that's a huge responsibility. I get that. But if an arbitrator is ruling on that, then we should go in that direction. You know, one thing about cops, they typically, whatever ruling is made, they'll go along with that. They might not like it, but they'll go along with it. So I just think that in the interest of having these cops out here doing the best they can for us as citizens in the city, I think that it would be prudent for us to go ahead and say, okay, and then renegotiate it next time around. But the arbitrator has made his ruling, and, you know, and that's an independent person from the police. So I think that it's leaving a bad taste in some of the officers' mouths. And I think that, if the arbitrator ruled in that direction, then that's the direction we should go.
And if not, then they should change the state law. But until that time, it looks like the city has, according to the arbitrator, zero chance of prevailing in court, which is where this is ending up.
You're right. If you want to change something like that, then change the legislation. But it's not fair to treat law enforcement any differently treat anyone else. You know, like I said, Fran, I understand that's a huge responsibility that they and by no means do I encourage poor behavior, because if you are a bad actor, then you should be treated as such. And let's be honest, we know that we have bad apples in CPD. I said that constantly, you know, and those people need to be dealt with. You know, I'm a firm believer in that. However, at the same time, If that's how the arbitrator ruled, then I think in fairness, that's the way we should go right now. And like you said, if we don't like it, then change the statute that provides for law enforcement to be able to do it.
The full city council is also poised to vote to require CPD to conduct yet another staffing analysis to determine how best to deploy the dwindling ranks of officers. Similar studies in 2016 and again in 2019 were not completed, Preliminary results not made public. Most of the recommendations gathering dust on a shelf. Why is it that at, you know, when many other cities do this kind of thing annually and adjust staffing annually, in Chicago, mayors, superintendents always seem to chicken out and take the path of least resistance. Nobody wants to give up officers so a district or neighborhood with more violent crime can get those officers. So there's always the path of least resistance. Why is it that we can't get this done and do it annually?
Well, you know, we can do it annually, but here's the thing, Fran. The crime picture is really fluid in a city like Chicago. Now, you're looking at a city that has 2.7 million people, roughly 160-something square miles of geographic area to cover, and crime. That's a lot to digest at one time. And so it's difficult to rely on a study to tell us where we should deploy officers, especially when I left, we had 13,500. I think it's down to 11,000 or something. And I got to tell you, we're heading for disaster because in a city this large, with the crime that we have, we need those officers. We need to bump that staffing back up to give the superintendent the officers that he needs around the clock in some of these bad areas to properly police the city. And, you know, these studies, good grief, I'd say study after study after study after study. And some of these studies we pay for. So how about taking some of that money and you know, turn the switch back on ShotSpotter. But at any rate, I think that because the crime picture in the city is so fluid, no alderman, not one of them, are going to want to give up police officers in their respective wards. And like I told you, early in the conversation, no one has ever said to me they didn't want police in their neighborhoods, because they do. They want to feel safe. They just want the police to be respectful and treat them fairly, which is fair. So I have an issue with studies trying to tell us where we should make deployment as opposed to the crime picture and the people that's out there watching it every day. Those are the folks that should be relied on to determine where we deploy these officers. And if we
and the mayor has eliminated hundreds of positions in the police department while civilianizing others, you're saying we simply don't have enough police officers, like 2,000 fewer than we need is what you're saying.
Correct. We got to bump those numbers back up so we can properly do the things that we need to be that need to be done in the city to keep us safe.
And yet the mayor and his superintendent are touting the reduction in homicides and shootings as robberies and smash and grab break-ins continue at a very alarming rate, with businesses hit multiple times. What needs to be done to get that under control?
Well, as I said, that's where I point to we need the staffing levels back up, because before I was able to, you know, gather some of the command staff together, and we would have think tanks to figure out different ways to effectively reduce crimes like this. So if you had the proper staffing, you could create a unit that could concentrate on things like that and help reduce it. Because let's face it, there are crews of folks out there doing this stuff, but you need enough officers to be able to dedicate to things of that nature. Once you get two or three of those crews in custody, then you'll see those numbers start to come down, because they're strategizing just like the police do. And because let's face it, the bad guy's job is not to get caught. Our job is to catch them. But you need the proper resources to be able to do that. So that's how that staffing level factors in. If you don't have enough to do it, those officers in these busy districts are running from radio call to radio call all day, every day. They don't have the time to dedicate or things of that nature. So you have to put specialized groups together sometimes, nip that in the bud, and then move on to the next thing. So I just think we're going down the wrong path in terms of staffing levels.
Snelling has been slow to assemble a command staff. He has yet to name a chief of patrol, a first deputy, an executive director of constitutional policing. Does that surprise you? Does it also surprise you that he has retained Fred Waller on his executive team in lieu of some of those people?
No, I think Fred can be very helpful
until he does get those other things in place. But I tell you, we're in February now. The summer is right around the corner. So hopefully he can get those things mapped out when he gets back, because those are important positions. You know, first deputy, chief of patrol, those are two very important positions, along with director of constitutional policing. And the fact of it is, Fran, you know, I sat there for almost 4 years. That's too much for one guy to try to handle. You know, one person can't do all of that. So we got to get those things in place so he can take some of that stuff off of his plate. Otherwise, we're going to burn him out, you know, before the summertime comes. So hopefully he can get those things resolved in the very near future.
You were a popular superintendent, but it ended badly when Lightfoot fired you after the embarrassing incident of drinking and driving, where you were found asleep at the wheel of your police SUV with the engine running after a night of socializing and drinking. You apologized for those actions. What did you learn as a man, as a human being, from that mistake? And what have you learned about how forgiving Chicagoans are?
Well, I would tell you this. Everywhere I go in this city, there's not one place I've been where I haven't received so much support and love from the city of Chicago. So I want to thank them for that. You know, and what it says is, you know, I'm human. You know, I made a mistake that particular night, and you know, I've apologized to it. You know, I caused embarrassment to myself as well as, you know, my family and the people that support me. But I'm human. You know, we all make mistakes. In my opinion, the worst mistakes are the ones you don't learn something from. Now, I will say this. I was never given an opportunity to really talk about that, because if you know this, you know, when that report came out, I was never interviewed. And I still to this day can't understand how you close out an investigation without interviewing the person that's accused. And so I'll just say this. Everything isn't what it seems, you know.
Well,
but
what
I don't
part
want
of it wasn't it? What part of it would you have added to that interview if you had one? What wasn't as it seems?
What I'll say is this, Fran. Did you see the video for that incident? I'm asking you.
Which one?
Did you? There was only one incident the
night of this episode.
Yes,
when they came up to the window and banged on it. What about
it? Did you see? I believe I did.
It's been a while. It's been a while.
Okay, but if you saw that video, of course, my intention was not to fall asleep, but I did pull over because I had a change in some medications. The part about how much I had to drink, I think, was that report skewered what actually happened. But if you saw the video, after about 10 seconds, I was talking to them like I'm talking to you now. You know, I remember after the video came out, people were calling me saying, is that it? Yeah, that's it. That was all there is to it. But I will say this. Listen, it happened. I made an error in judgment, but there's a reason your windshield is so big and the rear view mirror is so small. So I'm putting that in the rear view. I've moved on with my life. You know, the city has moved on. So I think that I'll just leave it at that. It's unfortunate that it turned out the way that it did. And I wasn't fired. I was demoted. So there's a difference. You know, I was a ranking CPD officer. So I wasn't under contract, so I couldn't be fired. I could only be demoted, which is what happened.
You returned to your career service rank. Before we let you go, the White Sox stadium shooting, that bizarre shooting last summer, they're about to come out with a report and say that it looks like the shots came from outside because of the trajectory, the nature of the wound, but they may not ever know. What do you think happened there?
From what I know of it, I do believe that it probably came from outside the stadium. That happened once before. I think it was in the 90s where we had an incident where gunshots came, you know, bullets were fired into the stadium. But in that incident, it didn't hit anybody. And the reason I say that is because when you look at it, if the gunshot had originated right there where those people were, there would have been more people reacting to the sound of it. In the stadium, you wouldn't have heard it, but right there in that section, there should have been some other people that had a reaction to hearing gunshots, and that just didn't occur. So from what I know of it and from what I've heard, it does appear that it came from outside, because there were, again, the shot spotter alerts right at the same time that would have given those bullets the seconds that they needed to come in from outside of the stadium. So that's another incident where ShotSpotter can shed some light on it. So I think at the end of the day, can we definitively say where it came from? No, but I do think that it probably came from outside of the stadium.
And what did you think of Brandon Johnson's crime-fighting plan, which looked a lot like Lori Lightfoot's to get at the root causes? What did you think of it?
Well, I think I haven't really looked at his crime-fighting plan, to be honest, but if getting to the root causes of crime is always a good thing, that's always a good thing. But that's not the only thing, because getting to the root causes, we have to remember that takes time. And the people in these challenged neighborhoods, they don't have the time for us to just wait years before we can get to the root causes. We need to do something today. So I think we should do both of those things at the same time, because we can. We have the resources to do it, and that's, I think, to me, that's the proven way to approach it. Do both things at the same time.
Eddie Johnson, thank you so much for joining us, sir. We look forward to whatever next chapter you come up with, other than the remodeling in your home. In the meantime, are you available? I have a few projects too. I'm joking. Anyway, take care of yourself, and we will see you all next week.
Okay, thanks, friend.
What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.